Hey, Book Besties, we're your hosts, Kelsey
and Nikki,
and this is For the Shelf Podcast.
Before we get started, this podcast is intended for a mature audience. Use of profanity is a definite, along with discussions of mature sexual themes and graphic content. Listener discretion is advised.
This week, we will be discussing Forged in Blood by Sadie Kincaid, but first, let's get into some bookish news slash other news. So first and foremost, this is coming to you the week of Valentine's Day. So either happy Valentine's Day or happy Galentine's Day, whatever you're celebrating. But let's get into the news. So we didn't have a review last week. And I know before that we were saying we were going to be reading Red Rising. I did, in fact, read Red Rising, and Nikki wanted to avoid reading the book so bad that she, like, basically broke her arm.
That is not really what happened, but I did want to read Red Rising. I didn't break my arm, but I did injure myself enough that I was in ridiculous amount of pain, ended up in the ER last week, and I'm in a brace and can't use my left hand, so...
So we're going to amputate. No, we're not. But yeah, so that did cause Nikki to obviously not be able to read and then have time to record. My husband read the book. We kind of read it in tandem, and we were going to put on an episode together, but we also have a small child. I'm 6 months pregnant. It just, the stars did not align, but I did read it. And we debated on if I was going to give kind of like a mini review or if we were going to save it and maybe read it at like, or have Nikki read it at a different time and do a full review. But ultimately, I think the best decision is just kind of not really a mini review, but my overall thoughts of the book. I personally do not think that it would make for a good episode. Mostly because it's very, like, trigger warning heavy. And it just didn't feel like something that we could really have, like, a good discussion about.
Before the arm incident, I listened to about 30 minutes of it. And it's heavy. And it's heavy right from the get-go. And that doesn't really make for, like, I don't think that really fits the tone of, like, our podcast.
Yeah. So I did read the book. I rated it 3.5 stars. It's not that it's terrible, but it's just like, it is very heavy. It's very sci-fi dystopian. Like, but the biggest problem for me is in Red Rising, they're children, they're teenagers. They're 16, 17, 18 year olds. And I mean, we're talking triggers of death, rape, war, gore, torture, and like adults are watching all of this happening. Nobody is intervening. Like they're pitting these kids against each other. There's slavery. Like it's very, and the child labor. I mean, he starts working when he's 13. They like marry these kids off when they're like 16 years old and like start families and stuff. So it's,
and they basically got to like work themselves to death to get food rations, and everyone's starving and like depressed, and they've never seen outside of the mines underground, and it was very heavy.
Like the old age for the beginning of the book is 35. Like you die by the time you're 35. So yeah, it's just a lot. I felt like it just wasn't a book that would be good for the podcast. I'm not saying that it's not a good book, but you really need to, like, think about, is any of that going to be triggering to you? I think I probably would have enjoyed this book better if it was about adults. Like, I know that the next, like, two trilogies, they're, like, in their mid-20s and then in their mid-30s, and those would probably be better. But the original trilogy, yeah, they're teenagers. So I think at the end of the book, he turns 18. But by that point, yeah, he's been, like, married, like...
And they're not young adult dystopians. They are shelved in the adult, you know, adults.
Yeah. So...
It's not the Hunger Games here.
No. So, do what you want with that information if that sounds like it may be something interesting to you that you would want to read. and you're perfectly fine with all of those triggers. Like, it is a decent plot. It is a decent book. I can see why it's so highly rated. It was a little too heavy for me. So I will personally not be continuing.
And what did the husband think?
He like, it's a man's book, you know, because they're like, oh, I'm a man, like, I'm war, I'm like, and they like, and in like the simulation of them playing war, like they play kings, and like you're the manliest man, and you have all these people, and like you go, like they literally go around, and when they like take over a castle, they turn all those people into slaves. So it's like how like amassing an army, like you're basically proving that like you have what it takes to lead an army. So he liked it. It's a man's book.
Okay. Okay.
So anyways, now moving into actual bookish news. So I really only have two things. One, it's kind of like old news now, but of course, you know, we got to talk about the Quicksilver stuff. So the title was announced for book two, and it's called Brimstone, which I personally think is a dumb title for a book. But I get it, like, they're, you know, whatever, and there's Quicksilver and then the Brimstone, and they're, I'm so
fancy as it is.
That's the me, yeah, part to it. I get it. It's just, I don't know, I think it's stupid.
It's just that we don't care.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And then the news I actually do care about, Carissa Broadbent, her Daughter of No Worlds trilogy is getting trad published.
That's very cool. I'm so happy for her. That was our very first
episode.
It was the Daughter of No Worlds. And that's still one of my favorite books so far that we've read.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the pot.
Yeah. I
started off real strong.
We did
that one. That was great.
We did. I really love that book. And so I need to hurry up and buy the indie covers before they are no longer available, because she's also going to be at a Polygon, so I'd like to get them signed so I have those.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm super excited for her. I'm so glad that this trilogy is getting the love and the recognition that it should. It is severely underrated. And I think, as much as I love The Crowns of Nyaxia, that's still like my favorite series trilogy by her. So
I still haven't read books two or three, but I will eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So now let's jump into the spoiler-free part of our review. So at the time of this recording, the Goodreads rating for this book is a 4.04 stars with just 2,000 ratings. This book was released in October of 2024, which surprised me. I thought it was like written previously.
Yeah, that's only a couple months ago.
Yeah, I know. And the first two are already out. And it's the first in the Broken Bloodlines trilogy. Like I just said, book one and book two are already released. And book three is going to be released, I believe, in April or May of this year. You can find this book on KU, audiobook, and in physical form. Don't forget to use bookshop.org to get your physical copy. Since it's so new, I don't know of any special editions for it.
I don't either. I thought that I had a special edition for this, but it was a totally different book that just had a similar title because, you know, that happens. I can't imagine what the audio for this book would be like, quite frankly.
Yeah, I don't know.
I did KU.
So did I.
I can't imagine the audio version of this. It frightens me, quite frankly. Frightens me.
Well, this book also has a ton of like multiple point of views. So yeah, you would need a lot of people unless,
I mean, if it's dramatized, you know what I hate when it's like a female narrator and then she just switches to her male voice for the male part.
Like, because there's four males, like like main male characters. So yeah, I mean, I don't know, it'd be dumb, but
I don't know. But like on another note, if you guys aren't familiar with bookshop.org, you can order new books and you select an affiliate bookstore and that bookstore receives a small portion of the sale. And what's really cool about Bookshop, and this is why I'm bringing this up this week because we just got ours, is that twice a year they do a big payout. So anyone that's purchased anything on Bookshop for the first 6 months of the year and then the last 6 months of the year, they throw into a big pot and then they divide it up among indie bookstores that are ABA members. And our payout this year that we just got last week was like $650. And that helped us pay rent this month. And so if you're into supporting indies, I want you to know that Bookshop really does do good. And it really does help because we totally needed that this month.
Yeah.
I was so thankful that it was there. So I don't know, just another way to do good in your community. I know that they don't beat Amazon's prices, but sometimes you just got to add that little,
you know. Yeah, support small local businesses for sure.
So I have the short straw this week, guys, and I have to read the very long book description. So we're going to do that. Okay. Every few millennia, a child is born. Some say they're marked with a curse. Others claim they possess the power of the ages. Meet Ophelia Hart, lover of classic literature and unicorns, an orphan with nobody in her corner, no family, no friends, but it's her loneliness that fuels her life's ambition to become a social worker and help the forgotten children just like her. For a foster kid with only slightly above average grades, it feels like a pipe dream. Except it seems that someone is looking out for Ophelia after all. When an unexpected opportunity to attend Montridge University arises, she thinks her life is finally taking a turn for the better. Too bad she comes to the attention of the three ruthless, arrogant commanders of the Ruby Dragon Society, three of the most feared and powerful vampires on campus. But Ophelia doesn't believe in vampires, or in wishes, or magic, or ancient prophecies, until she has no choice. Little does she know, she's about to have her whole world turned upside down. Because there is something about Ophelia Hart, something that captures not only the attention of the Ruby Dragon commanders, but also their powerful, enigmatic sire, Professor Alexandros Drakos. We're still going here. With no idea of the power running through her veins, Ophelia must learn to trust the very men whom all others fear. And she needs to do it fast. For there are darker forces at work than those at Montridge University. Forces that were long ago forged in blood.
I will say, for how long that is, that's pretty accurate to what the book is about. Like, the actual plot line.
Yeah.
That is the plot line.
I mean, yeah.
So.
I mean, Ophelia doesn't believe in vampires. Well, why does that matter? They are there.
Well, and we'll get into it a little bit more when we talk about, like, the plot and stuff. But there's a couple of things that they talk about in the blurb that I'm like, why is that necessary information?
Things they talk about in the book that I'm like, why is that necessary
information? Yeah, that's true. But which we'll get into once we get to the plot and stuff, because we got a lot of things to say. Okay. So, genre. This is a fantasy, romanticy. It's a reverse harem. It is a paranormal romance, a bully romance as well. If you're unfamiliar with what a reverse harem is, that is when there's one female and multiple males that are in a relationship, mostly a sexual one. The trigger warnings, there is obviously sexual content, death, bullying, there's blood, mild gore, there is talk about the foster care, foster system, attempted a sexual assault that is on page. And then we'll get more into this in the spoiler part of the review, but there is questionable uses of feminine hygiene products.
And these trigger warnings are from the author, with the exception of we added in foster care, foster system, because we figured that might be triggering for,
yeah, you know. She also says that there's blood play. I don't really see it as blood play. They're just like vampires. And obviously we know, like, vampires drink blood.
Yeah. It was nothing like, you know, cutting or, you know, knives or, it was just normal vampire shit, guys.
Yeah. Okay. So now let's get into our spice ratings. When we first picked this book, and I say we, and it really was me, I was definitely misled as to the spice of this book. I was under the impression that this was 5 jalapenos spicy. We're here for the smut. We're not here for the plot. My immediate thought is this is going to be just like Queen of
Court of the Vampire Queen.
Court of the Vampire Queen, which I've read that book, loved that book. It is similar in a sense of, like, it's a reverse harem, they're vampires, whatever.
That one is five jalapenos.
Yes, that one is five jalapenos. This one, not so much. Now, I did write it four. I did give it four jalapenos, but not because of the amount of scenes, but because, like, of, like, when you got into the scenes, they're obviously more elevated. There is male on male, and then there's, of course, the reverse harem. So it's her with one, two, or three guys all at the same time. The scenes are spicy, but they're not overly graphic, and they're not cringy, I would say. Like, I think there was maybe one scene that was cringy, and that's the one that, like, we'll talk about in the spoiler part. But overall, they're, I don't know how to put it. They're what they should be, in a sense.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. I only gave this three jalapenos. Despite the fact that we have, you know, multiple swords crossing and multiple people involved. And it's like, hey, if I brought a friend, we usually rate that four jalapenos.
Yeah.
But again, these scenes, while we know what's happening, they were not very long.
Yeah.
And they were not described in super detail. We could have made these really hot. We could have, you know, we could have made these scenes steamy as fuck. And we just didn't.
No,
in my opinion.
I think I gave it a little bit of an elevation too, because there were a few scenes that were public. So one, they're in the library. Like,
yeah, no, they're doing kinky stuff, but it's not really described. Like, I would not compare it to Katie Robert or Scarlett Sinclair or, you know, like any of those authors that really do describe their smut.
Yeah.
It was kind of like true. Wham, bam, thank you, done, in my opinion. Even the male, it was like, oh, he put it in there and then everyone felt really good. And then that was kind of it, you know? So there was some licking of the product, the final product. But again, I don't know. Three jalapenos. Three jalapenos. We could have done better.
I also will say that in this book, every single person is horny.
Just all the time.
For everyone. And everyone is fucking everyone. They're also, it's set in a college, like it's academia. And so you have professors that are fucking professors. You have students that are fucking students. You have professors that are fucking students.
Sexual tension actually between the two professors was one of the better, like sexual relationships, even though their sexual relationship was off page.
Yeah.
I thought that they had more of a chemistry than some of the other, you know, relationships.
Yeah.
Which we can discuss later.
But yeah. But yeah, everybody's horny for everybody. Everybody is fucked everyone. That's very clear in the book. And I will say the only thing besides that one particular scene that was a little kind of cringy and maybe actually, now that I'm thinking about it, could possibly be triggering is the vampires, like, they have a sire, right? And so the dynamic is they look at each other like brothers and, like, that's their dad, but they all fuck each other.
But I don't think they fuck the professor.
I don't, yeah, actually, you know what, yeah.
They don't fuck him.
Not on page, but it's definitely, like, you've picked up on it that they have before. Like, you can get, like, sexual tensions, like, in their monologues and stuff like that. But the and he refers to them as his boys.
Right.
And they refer to each other as brother, but they be fucking each other all the time.
Yeah, true. They do be fucking. The other thing that really kind of got me about this, I do not like bully romances. That is not my thing. And it was just like direct quote, why does hurting her make my cock so hard? Like hurting her feelings. Like, you know what I mean? Not like hurting her physically. Like we're not talking about like flogging or spanking or, you know, something that is consensual. Like the characters are like making her cry and then they're feeling all horny about it.
Yeah.
And to me, that's not my cup of tea. That doesn't turn me on. That's not something that, like, I find appealing.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, to each their own. We never kink shame around here. Ever.
Definitely have something to say about that in the when we get to the plot. But yeah, I definitely agree. I am not a big fan of bully romances. For sure. That's why, like, I was so turned off by Zodiac Academy.
Yeah.
So. Okay, so now let's get into Sweet Pinos. I gave it 2.5, and I think that's being generous. Like we were just saying, they were complete fucking dicks to her. Besides Malachi. Malachi was actually, like, a decent person. And he didn't, like, I don't know, he was just, like, a decent person. So they started bonding and, forming a friendship at the very beginning when the other two were still just being complete assholes to her. And then, of course, we get to, like, they're over that, and now everybody is with everybody, and, you know, they'll die and maim for her, and, you know, and they love her now, and whatever. But
yeah, they do love her. That was definitely, like, a whiplash thing for me. And I gave it 3 Sweet Pinos, mostly for Malachi. Because he genuinely cared about her. Kind of right from the beginning. So she smells really good, right, guys? Which we'll talk about when we get into the smell report, which is next. So instantly, they're all hard for the way she smells, but they're just so fucking mean to her.
Yeah.
Except for Kai, who, yeah, you know.
Which they call him, like, a sweet, sensitive soul or something like that. But, yeah, no, he's actually just, like, pretty decent and not a dick. And the other ones are dicks. And everybody's a dick.
Yeah, everybody's a dick. Side note, Malachi, I used to think it was pronounced Malachi. I just thought I would share that with you guys.
That's not my name.
Why do we have to constantly use the name Malachi / Malachi?
I can't.
No, really. So if you also were reading it as Malachi,
you are not alone.
You are not alone.
God, Malachi. Right.
So yes, my first encounter with this was The Sirens of Titan by Kurt Vonnegut, which is, like, one of my favorite, like, novels, like, literary fiction of all time, like, of the 5 that I've read. And I'll never forget the time I had a conversation in the bookstore about the character Malachi. And the guy was like, Malachi? And I'm like, oh.
Malachi.
So I was a full adult person before I knew it was Malachi.
That's funny. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do tropes. So the tropes for this book are touch her and die. It obviously bullies enemies to lovers. There's family. She's, like, the most specialist special. And then because they're vampires, they don't have mates like Faye do, but they, like, bond with each other. So then, of course, we have, like, they're all bonded.
And I guess technically it's Dark Academia.
Yeah.
Barely. Whatever. I mean, I suppose if we're stretching. We did just completely skip over my smell report.
Well, because you were grabbing your water.
Kelsey was on it. Okay, so people be smelling.
People do be smelling.
People do be smelling. Our main character, our FMC, Ophelia. By the way, her fucking name is Ophelia Illyria Hart. Can we just have a moment?
Because I have a lot to say.
Oh, my God. Okay, so Ophelia. Well, they call her Cupcake, but she smells like cupcakes, but she smells better than cupcakes. And so we're just constantly just all horny about the way she fucking smells.
She smells so fucking good. I mean, that's literally on repeat. I don't even know how many
times. She be smelling. We do only have a smell report for one man, one boy, one of the triad here. Malachi. Malachi's.
King Marco Rubio.
Fuck Marco Rubio. He did some weird shit. Listen, lately. Don't even get me started. Listen to the last episode if you want to hear more about Marco Rubio. Anyway, so Malachi, he smells citrusy with a hint of spice. That's it. That's what we've got. The other two dick faces, they don't smell. We do have the smell of a random cheerleader.
Okay.
Just your cheerleader A, or cheerleader number 1, if you will. It smells like apples and cinnamon. She can do splits also.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that was just random. I thought we would,
And then we have one character that smells rotten.
Oh, we do have a character that smells rotten.
I did.
That smells a bit like troll.
Yeah.
Quote.
She smells like a troll.
Yeah, she smells like a troll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so now let's get into plot, characterization, world building. So first we're going to start off with our characters. So we have Ophelia, who is our...
Ophelia Illyria.
Who is our main female character. One of the three boys we have, or I guess all three of them, we have Kai, Malachi. We have Axel. They say what his real name is, but like once, and that he hates it, so they just call him Axel. And then we have Xavier. And then we have the one who sired them, and that is Professor Alexandros. So he's like the head of the family. And then we have like a bunch of different offshoots for like a couple different characters. But those are like the main.
So, and in his vampire politics, he's actually the middle. His father is the head of the clan. But, you know, he is the professor. And
yeah. In this little family.
And, yeah. He's the patriarch of this family.
So those are like the main characters. I have also noticed that lately a lot of books, Ophelia is becoming a very popular name to use in a lot of books because we just read a book where her name was Ophelia. And then
Phantasma.
And then this one. And then I just caught on Book Talk another book that is titled literally Ophelia and has the main character name Ophelia. Anyways, that just like it clicked in my head. But then we have a couple of things about her. So a couple of the things that they talk about in the blurb that don't really matter, or to me, I'm like, why is that necessary, especially in the blurb? One, why do we care that she likes unicorns? I don't know. And then two, there's not a lot of like describing of, I mean, they're in college, right? But the author, if I remember correctly, doesn't really explain Monterage. To me, it's just like it's a college where she lived, and it's not like an Ivy League. It's not like a huge like university. It's not that difficult. It's not prestigious from my understanding from what little the author talked about it. So why do we care that her grades were just above average? And they don't.
Yeah, we don't care.
And they don't spend like, a couple of scenes happen in a classroom. But otherwise, like, we're not caring about what she's studying, what classes she's in. Like, there's only like two scenes. And one is like her being bullied. Another is her making a friend. And then the other one is like a sex scene that happens in class. And it happens in Professor Dickhead's class. So I don't know why. And that's constantly brought up that she just has above average grades.
Like, right. So
I don't know why that matters.
I don't know why it matters either. And yeah, the college itself, like as far as setting goes, it really wasn't. The only thing that I pulled away that I thought might be important was that they said that the college really only accepted, you know, like paranormal creatures and or humans that were kind of like weak and loners, like to be fed off of, sort of.
Yeah, they're like, they accept humans to basically be like food for the non-human students, basically.
Right.
But yeah, we don't get like where in the country this is. Like we don't get a lot of like, and this apparently the timeline is a couple of months. We don't really get a change of seasons. Like
it feels like she's in like a high school boarding prep school.
It doesn't feel like
a college. It feels, to me, the whole book felt like they were just in high school.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There was no independence, college vibe. She doesn't act her age, in my opinion.
No.
There's no like independence.
There's a football team that is apparently really, really bad. She goes to exactly one game for 35 seconds. That's it. They have these societies, but that's the extent of like, they don't have like Greek row. I don't know. Yeah.
I think that the societies are like her version of sororities and fraternities.
But it definitely lacked as far as
building. It lacked description. It lacked world building. It was just like, hey, we're just here.
Yeah. And then like, the boys, they even mention that they don't attend class. They're just there. They never leave. They've been there for like hundreds of years.
Yeah, one of the oldest boy is 247.
Yeah, so they just like stay being like frat boys basically forever.
Yeah, and all they really care about in the beginning before they, you know, really kind of develop this back and forth with Ophelia is they really just care about eating and fucking. And that really seems really just like one dimensional in that sense.
Yeah, and they like lead their society and they talk about like these trials, but you don't actually spend a lot of like, they just kind of whiz by. They don't really matter. But that's what they're in charge of. And that's like producing more like the regular humans that get turned into vampires. And
to me, it was like Axel and Xavier, they don't have their own personalities. They're just the same person. It really could have just been one character.
So I put like my description for them is
Like really,
they are.
Yeah, there's no distinct voice there. For either of them.
No. Kai's the only one that, like, really kind of stands out on his own. And he has a little bit more time, like, with Ophelia. The other two are just, they're the ones that are just complete dickheads to her. Which kind of also leads me to another point. Like, the bully romance, it's, like, super heavy. Like, she's being bullied by literally every single person in this book. Besides Kai, and it's like super heavy into the bullying, and then it's like what a dead stop 180 fucking whiplash to then all of a sudden they're madly in love with her and nobody's allowed to fuck with her,
right?
Like, I mean, like it, there's no easing into it. It's just like one second they're being dickheads and then the very next second
Fucking her falling in love for it. But yeah, it is total whiplash.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Like, you know it's coming, but at the same point, it's like, it was just done so poorly that I'm like, what? Like, it makes her look like a really weak character.
It does. And I know that the author was trying to make it see it because she was getting turned on in the beginning. Like, by them being mean, even though they were bullying her, like, she was still, like, turned on by it and turned on by it when they were like, oh, we're gonna tie you up and keep you in the basement. And she was, like, getting, like, wet thinking about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. When it finally came time, like, you had all of, like, I don't know if it was supposed to be a slow burn or what the fuck it was supposed to be. So, I don't know if it was supposed, like, if the author was intending it to be, like, a slow burn. It did not read like that to me.
It did not read like a
slow burn. But, like, there was, like, a second where it was almost, like, non-consensual. Like, there was, like, that hint of it because, and of course, like, you know, I don't know, spoiler alert, she's a virgin. And she go like, that's a trope, I guess. But she, like, is like, no, I don't want to do this. And he was like, no. And she's like, yeah, no. And he's like, I think you do. And then she's like, okay. And I'm like, what? Like, I mean, immediately off the heels of them, like, basically, like, breaking her heart, which I don't know how they broke her heart when all they've done has been complete dicks to her anyways.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
So, yeah,
I don't even know the words that I want to use. I just feel like everything, like, there is a plot, and there is a place, and so we have a plot, we have a setting, we have characters, but everything is, like, watered down. It's unrealized, it's unformed.
To me,
there's not one single part to me that feels like it's fully developed.
Yeah. To me, actually, when you break it down and you look at the actual plot line, I liked the actual plot line. It wasn't very terrible. Where this is different from, well, it's different for a lot of reasons, from Court of the Vampire Queen. Court of the Vampire Queen, it's just smut with a plot thrown in at the last, like, 20 pages. And she's like, oh, shit, yeah, I should probably, like, solve this plot line real quick, right? But you know that. You know that it's about the smut.
Right.
This one, it's not. There is an actual plot with smut sprinkled in. And when you boil it down to the actual plot line, it's not that bad. But the problem for me is the writing is so juvenile. in this book. Like, it's a very juvenile, like, style. Like, yeah, they're supposed to be in college, but it reads like they're in high school. Like, yeah, the things, oh, she, you know, she loves unicorns. And then, like, the dialogue that they have is so juvenile. Our favorite thing to hate about the book was they talk about her perky, juicy tits.
Yeah, and I even looked at you and I was like, did a man write that part? Like, what female is looking at another female and being like, perky, juicy tits?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. No.
And, like, for her, I give her a little bit of a grace because she's 19. The boys in the, like, and that's the other thing, is they're referred to as boys. They're over, like, at least 200 years old. Like, I think the youngest is 150 years old. Like, at some point,
there would be some level of sophistication just from, like, wisdom and worldliness from having existed for that long.
Especially when you think about the timelines of when they were all born and the society that they had lived in back then. Like, they would never, it wouldn't play out the way that it has. And that's what bothered me the most, was just the writing style just didn't match what she's trying to accomplish, I felt like.
No, I agree. And, I mean, aside from Ophelia, Illyria, and perky juicy tits, the other thing, which really aggravated the ever-loving fuck out of me, and it's on page two, and it's just such a throwaway. They have a demon blade. Do you know what the demon blade is made of?
Oh, God, I can't remember.
Painite. Like, really? Like, you're going to throw painite out on page two? You couldn't come up with a fucking thing better than painite?
Yeah.
Come on, lady.
Yeah, I just... Okay. So, yeah. Let's get into our rating.
Oh, Freakazoid. Let's not forget.
Oh,
so
yeah.
She gets bullied, right? She gets bullied in fucking college. Turn around and just slap a bitch. Like, really? Like, you're just going to take it and you're in college?
Yeah.
You're a fucking grown-ass adult? I would kick your ass if you fucking talk to me like that.
The thing is, the one thing that the author does mention about this campus is that there's, like, thousands of kids, right? And everybody just happens to just stay in, like, high school bullying mode. Like, when I went to college, even, like, before I went to, like, a university and I was just at a community college, I didn't talk to a single fucking person.
Me neither.
In class. Like, what do you mean you're just, like, walking around campus and people are, like, calling you a freak? Or you're sitting in class and people are, like, mean-girling and, like, calling you a freak. And there's one, like, top girl who, like, comes in the middle of the semester. You know, when you mention
mean girls, that's exactly, like, the hierarchy that we had going on for Penelope.
Yeah.
You know, like, the head mean girl with, like, the little bitchy mean girls.
Yeah, and she's got, like, her minions or whatever.
Yeah.
But, like, where in fuck college does that happen?
No. I didn't make a single friend when I went to community college. I did not talk to a single person. I went to fucking class and I went home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if someone had come up to me and slapped me in the middle of class and called me a freakazoid, I would have beat the shit out of them.
Yeah, and especially, like, given, like, you can maybe expect some of that when you're running in, like, freak circles, like, in the fraternities and sororities. But that happens specifically at those events with, like, those specific, like, people. It's not just happening out in the middle of campus or in the middle of class. So, yeah, I forgot all about that. But that pissed me off, too, because I'm like, this is not real life. Like, this would never... I mean, granted,
it's vampires and witches and what have you.
But still...
Also, if you're gonna have, I mean, what, an urban fantasy?
Yeah.
Right? If then let's make the urban part be realistic.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm trying to believe that these two things are existing side by side, but I don't believe that your realistic thing exists.
Yeah.
So how can I believe that you're, like, suspend my disbelief to believe your unrealistic aspect exists?
Yeah, it was annoying. Again, back to the just juvenile writing style. So, okay, our ratings, 2.5 stars.
That's high.
Again, because I like the actual plot line. When you just look at the actual plot line, the sex scenes were decent for what they were. They weren't super cringy. It's just the writing style ruined the book.
I put 2 stars. I feel like that was generous. I really did not enjoy this book at all. There was not really a part that I enjoyed.
I was so misled on this book.
I was too. I really thought we were getting a five jalapeno. I was like, all right, M. Let's cross these swords. Let's get some, like, well, yeah. I'm like, yeah, let's do it. Like, I was here for it. And then I felt very let down.
Book talk let us down again. And not even just book talk, but like the reviews that we read.
I know. That is the majority of that 2,000 people.
Yeah. Like, yeah, this is fucking great.
Yeah, because we were like,
what are you reading? What are you reading, people?
I don't know. Dude, I don't know. And again, what I have here is just kind of everything that we've already said. It just felt like high school.
Yeah.
And I could not suspend my disbelief. I can't believe you named your character Ophelia Illyria. And I don't think anyone's used the term freakazoid maybe since like 1992.
Yeah.
If any of you were alive in 1992.
I was just born.
Well, I was in elementary school. Anyhow, 2 stars.
Okay. So I think it's very clear that this book is not for our shelves.
This is not for my shelf. No. I would not pay money for this book.
No.
I would take this book if someone donated it to the shop. But that is the only instance in which I would touch a copy of this book. I'm not going
to go actively seeking the book out to buy. Yeah, no. No, I don't need a shelf trophy.
And I would feel guilty selling it to someone.
There would be a discussion. I don't know. Because you're really keen on selling Nicholas to people. So
Nicholas was great.
Don't even get me started.
Right.
Nicholas was
amazing. Where is that book?
We signed it into a blind date and we sold it to somebody.
Yeah, that's about the only way that that book was leaving.
Uh-huh.
Oh, Lord.
Or it's on the bus. Who knows? It might be on the bus in the spice section.
Okay. So that is it for our spoiler-free review of Forged in Blood by Sadie Kincaid. As always, be sure to give us some stars, leave us a comment, let us know if there's anything that you would like us to cover this year. We still have quite a few slots open. That we actually really desperately need to fill those because we're just out of books here in a...
Yeah, and as a reminder, Kelsey's kind of out for the month of May. Although I realize I have a super huge important life event happening in May as well.
Yeah.
My son's graduating high school.
He is!
So, and then it's his 18th birthday and we're doing a family trip to the theme parks or whatever.
Oh, did you convince him to finally do that?
I don't know. But anyway, anyhow. So we may have a bye week there, but I am looking for some buddies for episodes while Kelsey is, you know, squeezing out babies. Baby. No, singular baby.
I was singular baby. Why?
You
know, have twins. I don't.
It would be really great if there was just an extra one in there.
God, no, there would not. It would come and live at your house.
No, thank you. My house is full right now.
It's like my boyfriend moved in.
I'm not sure.
He's been here for a long time.
It do be like that. It do be like that. Okay, so join us next week for I'm so excited.
Oh my God, Jesus.
Okay, so join us next week.
Having heart palpitations.
So excited. Okay, so join us next week for our review of Deep End by Allie Hazelwood. If you know anything about me, if you've listened to any of the episodes, she is my autobiography author. I fucking love her. I've already started this book. I love it. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I actually care about this one.
All right. I went to Barnes & Noble and I bought it. I haven't opened it yet. It's very pretty. It's got like little swimmy edges.
Yeah. And we normally don't do new releases on the podcast, but I looked at Nikki and I said, this book is coming out and we are recording season 2. We have to do it. I was like, I'm not putting this on the back burner. I need to read it.
We're doing it. We're doing it for Kelsey. Which means that at any point this season, I get to pick a book.
You've picked like the first two of this season.
That's not true.
House of Beating Wings?
Okay, I picked the Birdman book. I did. Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Whatever.
You did pick that one. Anyways.
We're going to go back stage now. So if you have read this book and you want to hear our discussion and or questions and or whatever, follow us. And if you're never going to read this book and you just want to hear us talk about questionable use of feminine hygiene products, then
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, stay tuned. Okay. Should we just jump right in with that part? Or
Yeah, please, 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 please. Okay.
So we saw this in a review. So it was not a jump scare for us, like we just did to people who decided to jump off and not listen to this part. But, and I honestly, again, I don't want to say it was a letdown, but I was expecting more details in this than
it was watered down. That
it was watered down, but they're vampires, obviously. And she gets her period, and they come up with a genius idea to take her tampons and make them into popsicles.
But they don't actually, like, they talk about that, but I don't think they actually do it. We don't hear about it if they do it.
We don't know about it. They mention that it's a genius idea and that they're going to do it, but then it never, like, pops up on page.
Yeah. Well, so apparently her, like, menstrual blood tastes better than her regular blood.
Yeah.
They were really excited about that. And then she's like, he was like, oh, do you use tampons? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, I'm going to need those. And she was like, ew, no, that's fucking disgusting. Because it is fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, if you don't give them to me, I'm just going to take them out. Well, and that, like, the whole time, like, I'm sitting next to my boyfriend and I'm like, ugh. Like, it was gross. It grossed me out. This is fucking gross.
It's the one sex scene that was cringy because they obviously register. I can't remember which one. One of them's eating her out, and he recognizes.
They all take turns.
Yeah. So he recognizes that she's starting her period, and she's like, oh my God. Like, it's like a couple days early, and she's like mortified, and he's like digging it. And then the other two are like, I need to get in there and have some of that. And so that, like, you know, kickstarts. It doesn't necessarily kickstart, but, you know, it comes out more. So they're just sitting down there having their little whatever. And
they call it pink tinted fluids.
Yeah. And then
pink tinted fluids.
And then that's what leads to the genius thought about the tampons. So, yeah, I was glad that
I could see my face right now.
That was seen, and I'm glad we kind of knew that that was coming because I read it. I was in the middle of the night. I was also laying in bed next to my husband, and I probably would have freaked out more had I not been alerted to the fact that that was coming somewhere. But it happens, like, late in the book. We're talking, like, 70% of the way through the book, and then
the way I pictured it, like, I pictured it that it was supposed to be, like, we were talking about this because we knew about it before we read it. I thought it was supposed to be, like, funny.
Yeah.
It was not funny. There was nothing funny about this.
No,
literally just gross.
Well, I think we've also now established that this book was nothing like we thought it was.
No, really. I want my money back. I paid nothing, actually, for this book, but I want my money back.
Yeah. Okay, so then we have... So, Professor Dickhead. So, he spends the whole time in this book, like, pining after her but not wanting her because he alludes to he lost somebody in like...
I think that he was previously bonded to an Elementi before and he died. And yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of clear.
Yeah.
But we don't get to really learn anything about his trauma.
I'm like, they allude to maybe it was like her...
Like, I thought we were going to have a reincarnation situation. Which we didn't discuss in the first book, if there is a reincarnation situation.
Yeah, so I don't know. Because, like, they both say, like, how they feel familiar to each other. I don't know. It's weird. But he ends up just being a dickhead. And a lot of his point of view pages are, like, working in the background. And then he finally, like, I think it's the last chapter or two chapters. But he finally bonds with her. Like, he, like, is just like, I don't even...
He can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he finally, like, bonds with her. But he was not happy about it whatsoever.
No, and he was really against it, and he was really against the boys doing it, too, because he's like, you only have heartbreak and pain and whatever.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Sad man. Yeah, so then she ends up being, like, the Elementi, whatever you want to call it, which is, like... I don't know. Are they a witch? Are they a demon?
She's a witch adjacent being that controls all four elements.
Yeah.
And that, so they say, like, the witches can, like, manipulate the elements, but, like, the water has to already exist.
Yeah.
In the periphery. But the elementized, they can just create power.
Yeah.
Basically from themselves rather than pulling from a source.
Yeah. And so, like, you see it, like, it rains when she's sad. They're pretty much confirmed that she, like, started a fire that, like, burned down her high school. But in the prologue, you assume she's the baby. So she, like, killed a bunch of people when she was still in the womb by, like, catching them on fire. At one point, like, she, like, steals the air from the room when they're, like, in the kitchen. And he, like, says what she is.
Yeah. And then her...
she climaxes.
There's little earthquakes.
Earthquakes. Yeah. So that's how he, like, comes to... And he's, like, 2,000 years old. So, like, he's, like...
Yeah. No. But she's so dumb. I mean, if you're living your whole life and it rains every time you cry, wouldn't you kind of, like... And when, like, you pick up on that, you'd be like, that's so weird.
And especially because, like, depending on how hard she's crying is how hard it rains. Like, if she's just, like, upset, it, like, sprinkles. But if she's, like, crying ugly tears, it's, like, torrential downpouring.
Right. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like a deluge.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then the last thing I really have is just kind of, like, a question. So, like, at one point, They're at the, like, final trial or whatever for the humans that are going to be turned into vampires. And they tell her to, like, stay at the house. And she's like, okay, I'm going to stay at the house. And then this is when she's bonded to all of them. And then she has, like, this, like, feeling because, like, they can all feel each other. They can talk to each other in their heads, like, whatever. So she, like, has this feeling that they're all, like, super in danger. And so she, like, goes to the hunt and then she, like, gets captured. And then they want to, like, kill her. And the professor finds her. And, like, saves her or whatever. And then he says, like, oh, I'm pretty sure she was compelled to go there. Like, she didn't just, like, go there to go there. And then they don't really, they just, that's, like.
So my only guess to that was, because right previous, right before that, right, she was at, like, the witch's sorority house.
Yeah.
So, and I don't want to think that her one and only friend that she's made ever in her whole life did it, but yeah. I mean, that was where she was, and those things do magic.
Well, yeah, and then you have to think about it, like, the leader of the house or whatever said that she was friends with somebody that, like, knows Ophelia, like, is related to her or something like that, and so she's protect, like, to take her under her wing and, like, to protect her so you don't think it's her. But, like, that's the other thing with this book is, like, in the blurb, they talk about, like, oh, there's darker forces and, like, that she's going to have, like, an and you don't really see enemies besides, like, the stupid fucking mean girls. And you don't, there's no.
Oh, right, it's unexplained.
Yeah, there's no real talk about, like, a witch or, like, a vampire or a werewolf or, like, there being, you know, like, a villain that you can clearly see in the book. But this alludes to the fact that there is, but you don't know. Who would, I don't know.
Right. Unexplained.
Yeah.
The other thing that I have is I was really confused. So Penelope is her bully, and Penelope was her high school bully. And the only thing that's really stated was that Ophelia received a part in a play that Penelope wanted. And Penelope wanted this part to please her father, to impress her father. Right.
Yeah.
And then so she hated Ophelia for taking this part. But this hatred is so deep and so strong and so disproportionate to the crime. Like, Penelope tries to have her killed.
Like, multiple times.
And it's just, like
transfer that schools.
To be near her.
To bully her.
Yeah. And she does say something, there is, like, a throwaway line where she said that her father was kind of, like, felt bad for Ophelia or, quote-unquote, protective of Ophelia.
I don't remember what it was. That her dad liked Ophelia.
And oh, because he was a teacher at the high
school. He was a teacher, yeah.
But, like, it just didn't make sense. It was just so, the hatred was just so disproportionate and unexplained. And that made no sense to me. So, I don't know. Like, do we think somebody was trying to get Penelope to do these things? Like, maybe that's the dark forces?
Yeah, I think they allude to that. Like, the guys assume that that's what's happening. And because they're like, she's human, because the one bites her to keep an eye on her, because they're like tasked with protecting Ophelia. And so that's when he was like, she's human, but there's like something about her that is like off.
Right, that her blood tastes rancid.
Yeah, and so they assume like that somebody's pulling her strings and making her like target Ophelia. And I was like, okay, well, this is like going to be like the clear villain, but then she gets killed off. So unless that's like going to be a plot twist and she's not actually dead.
But even if she's not dead, she's probably not, wasn't able to compel her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because at that point, she's already dead.
Yeah.
You know.
So, I don't know. Yeah, weird. But, yeah, that was, like, the only, like... Yeah, and so, yeah. But, like, she's the only, like, villain in the book. I don't know, but... And then the last thing I have, did you actually go back and read the epilogue? Because I know you said you didn't.
I did not, because I read the book. I read the book. I did not feel compelled to read the epilogue. To me, I was like, my duty is done, and I don't care.
So the epilogue just kind of like confirms everything that they didn't really say. So Ophelia is the baby from the prologue.
But we knew that.
Yeah, Nazelle, whatever her name was, like, confirms that Ophelia's powers were bound.
Like, we also knew.
Yeah, which they were debating doing in the prologue. And she basically says that they put Ophelia, like, that the only way that somebody can break the binds that are on their power are by feeling emotions, and, like, basically they have to, like, have too many emotions, because that's what the elementes or whatever go off of, that just overrides the binds, basically. And so she like alludes to the fact that they purposely put her in this like life of like misery, where she's going, I think that she said she was in like 27 different foster homes or something, and like they set it up like she had no friends. So maybe the Nazeel person was pulling what's her face's strings to be mean to her, to cause her to like have to have all of these feelings. And then like she's the one who doctored it to that she got put with Professor Dickhead because his losses were so great. And when they finally bound her, like she, or when they finally bonded, like her powers came out. And yeah, it was like just the epilogue. It was like a page and a half.
Yeah.
But yeah. So it sets up, I guess, book two to where now, like, she has full access to her powers. She set his, like, she set his office on fire or whatever. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not going to read book two.
No.
Nope. Never. Never going to read book two.
No.
Sorry.
Not going
to. It's really great that this person wrote a book. They finished their book. They published their book. They are highly rated on Goodreads. Good for them.
Yeah. I think I would maybe only ever read this book if I get, like, severely bored and I ran out of other books to read.
And like, you were on a desert, like, you plane crashed, and the only book that was available to you was...
Let's say, like, okay, so I talked to my husband about this earlier, and with all the planes falling out of the fucking sky recently, I'm not going to fly to D.C. And so I'm going to ride, because, like, my husband and my daughter and my father-in-law, they're also coming to D.C., but they're doing their own thing when we go to a Polycon. And so they're taking the RV, and it takes forever and a half to get anywhere in the RV. So we're going to be in the RV for, like, 13 hours. So, like, let's say I go run through on the 13-hour trip up and the 13-hour trip back. I run through all the books.
Like, in the world?
But, no, like, the books that I have with me or, like, on my TBR. Then I might, like, be, like, I'm bored enough to actually read this book. Or, like, you know, let's say I got to spend X amount of time in the hospital because of, you know, the apparent twins you think I'm having.
Yeah, you know. What if you have puppies? What if it's, like, a litter?
Then they're definitely coming to live with you. Your boyfriend was looking for puppies today.
I know, he's got to stop doing that.
I Okay, well, that is it for our review of Fortune Blood by Sadie Kincaid. Don't forget to join us next week for my super fucking, I cannot wait, so excited review of Deep End by Allie Hazelwood.
My unexcitement matches Kelsey's excitement because this is a college swim team romance.
It's going to be so good. I'm so excited. Okay, anyways. And I'm not a big contemporary romance person, but there's just something about...
I want to see expectations.
There's just something about Allie Hazelwood that I just, like, I can't... I liked
Bride, so I'm here to try her contemporary romance. I just love to give you a hard time.
Yeah. But anyway, so, yeah, join us next week for that review. And we will see you guys later.
Bye, book besties.